Tommy Gazzola joins us. Now, Tom, before we get to the orders, can you update Struds and I? Who's the bromance, all the pictures you're taking around Rogers' place with here the last few days on your Instagram? I'm just curious.
Bromance. Speaking of bromance, YouTube bromancing there. Tintin and Greg's nice suit today, by the way. I got to give you props for busting out the purple. It looks sharp. That's Mike Penhollow from Bruins TV. He's the guy in charge of Behind the Bee, their behind-the-scenes documentary that's like an ongoing thing. And we started, well, it was his idea, but we started a podcast. And it's just things around the league, from traveling around the league. And it's kind of funny. It's a different take on hockey. I know everyone loves the hardcore in-game stuff and updates and all of that, and those podcasts are popular too. But this one's more like best hotels in the league, best restaurants to go to in the league, best pillows at the best hotels. Just the side stuff, and it's kind of like the game away from the game. Something Strutty, I think, would probably get a kick out of as well. And so, yeah, Mike Penhollow from Bruins TV, he's a beauty. And we just talk about other stuff, and it kind of opens up things to a bigger audience. And it was his idea, Greg, so I'm not going to lie to you. But it's kind of refreshing to kind of talk about all the other stuff that comes with covering a hockey team every day.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go. And, yeah, Tintin is here. Thanks for reminding us. It's looking good. We haven't seen the Tintin in a while, but it's in full effect on old Uncle Strutty today.
Looks great.
You know, the orders were in Tampa Bay last week. That was a tough test, but there was no Stamkos, no Kucherov, Cirelli. They got the Boston Bruins tonight, and all their guns are in the lineup. Well, the orders have lost another big bullet in Oscar Klefbom. Like, if the little engine that could wins tonight, man, I don't know. I got to give him massive props, because this would be a monumental upset with this many injuries against the team that's best in the NHL. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've only allowed 13 goals in that span.
Yeah, oh man, the Bruins are humming along, and there are similarities to that game on Thursday in Tampa that we saw, where, you know, now Tampa's riding an 11-gamer, and that was the 9th straight win for them, and you're right, like, the holes on the Lightning roster, you can't overlook that, but the Oilers did give themselves a chance in that game on Thursday in Tampa. Obviously, that turnover on the power play, you know, having another shorty go back the other way, similar to the one that we saw on Tuesday against the Hawks. Ended up, you know, doing the Oilers in. But great reference on the little engine that could, because, you know, as good as the Oilers are probably feeling right now, and you get a sense talking to those players, like, they like what's going on. 3-1 without McDavid. This could go sideways and fast, guys. Like, this team is stacked. It looks like Boston's just gearing up for another postseason run. And quite honestly, from the outset of the season, I think they've been pretty determined and on a mission. But here's the thing. The Oilers, for whatever reason, are 8-2 against the Bruins in recent history. They've won 4 of the last 5 visits from Boston. And I think the most important thing here is the fact they went into Boston in early January and played a solid team game and walked away out of an afternoon game with a 4-1 win. And that was kind of the start of Mike Smith's pretty big run here, where he's gone 9-1-2 in his last 12 starts. So maybe there's some belief, and if you have a belief system that's kind of riding high in your group, maybe you can give yourselves a chance. But all the potential for this to go bad in a hurry is completely there, and the Oilers are going to have to bring their A++ game, I think, tonight, boys.
You know, I don't think you're that far off, but to be honest with you, Thomas, you know, when I look at this matchup, it's basically Draisaitl versus Bergeron's line. And then if that can be a saw off or whatever the case is, they break even. The rest of the team, what can they do? And, you know, I think that's the message that has to be delivered in the lineup. Say, hey, Draisaitl's guys, we're going to take care of Bergeron. You guys have to beat the other three lines. Like, is that – I mean, it's not like those other three lines are absolute massive. I mean, that second line is kind of hit and miss with Krejci and DeBrusque.
Yeah. And here's the thing, Strutty, to your point, I mean – Benson looked great on Sunday, and it looks like he's starting to come out of his shell a little bit at the NHL level. But Shahan's been good. Archibald's been a little pit bull on the ice as well. And if they can rise to the challenge, like, on paper, I think it's fair to say the Bruins are just a more sound team. But you got to play the games to find out what happens. And if this Oilers team can continue to have the big line driving the bus, but you got the other three lines, you know, helping to push from behind and get things going, then they might be okay. I don't know, Struds. I still think the Bruins are the deeper team. I don't put a lot of faith in the Colby Cave line to really ratchet it, rank it up there and crank things up. So I've liked at times the Gaetan Haas, Sam Gagner, Alex Chiasson combination, but you know, I'm looking at the third line of the Bruins. You got Charlie Coyle, Anders Bjork, and Danton Heinen. And I'm like, well, you know what? Coyle and Heinen are probably better than Gaetan Haas and Alex Chiasson. And then, mm-hmm. you know, a toss-up between Bjork and Gagner. So, I don't know. I don't know, Stras. I still look at this Bruins team, and I'm just like, that's a solid team with high pedigree. And you better bring it, otherwise you're in trouble.
Tom Gazzola joins us, Gazzola Chronicles here on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Tommy, Randy Ambrosi, the commissioner of the CFL, floated out the idea of going to one division in the CFL, which I've talked about for a long time. I think it's long overdue, considering they basically play an even schedule, except two games, right? 16 of their 18 games are the exact same, and then you've got two where you stay in your own side of the country. I have no problem with that. You can continue to do that. You'd have your six best teams going at it. The only thing I don't like is the top team then gets to pick who they play. I don't see any reason to put that in. Just put the number one seed and two get a bye, and then they'll play, you know, accordingly to the highest seeds remaining and so forth. Do you think the change to a 1-6 one division will come this year?
Ooh, it's going to be on the table, Greg. And it's interesting because there's, you know, the CFL has its own competition and competition committee. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but they have their own, and it's got the PA involved. Obviously, GMs around the league are involved. So it sounds like it's completely potentially something that could be put in place this season. They might delay it, make it happen next year. And I know there's been griping, especially from Western Division teams. You know, if you look at the Eskimos a couple of years ago, they finished 9-9, missed the postseason. And then you're looking at the East Division and you go, well, there's a sub-500 team and they're making it into the playoffs. I know that was a bone of contention. I understand that. I can appreciate this, Greg. I can appreciate the fact that Randy Ambrosi and the Brain Trust and the CFL are looking and exploring options, and they're putting out feelers to the fan bases. And they're incorporating the fans' opinion and showing that they care what the feedback is actually going to be. And I can say, okay, I respect that. And let's see where this goes. They don't have to make changes. They could keep things status quo, whatever. But I can appreciate the fact that there's a willingness to try to improve the game and not let it get stale and move it in the right direction. You're trying to draw in a bigger audience. You're trying to grow this international football conglomerate that Randy Ambrosi is spearheading. I respect that, and I like him looking outside the box. If they change to the 6-team format next year, I'm cool with it. But you know, the picking of the opponent in the postseason, I just think that's weird. And you talked about it last week about MLB exploring that option too. It just, something about it doesn't seem right. And tell me if I'm wrong, because it just doesn't feel right. You get to pick who you face in the postseason. To me, it's just bizarre and off, but it's something to explore, and I can admire and appreciate that for sure.
Alec Martinez got traded today to Vegas. Is he the difference maker for a group? Because I'm not sure that I think he's, you know, he's probably a second pair defenseman. I don't know if he's a top pair defenseman. Does he make that big a difference for that group?
I think for that group, Struds, he probably does. And it's interesting that they make that move, because they've admitted, like, they hate each other, those two teams, and they're each other's biggest rival and all of that. And considering, you know, you got Shea Theodore and Nate Schmidt, those guys are bona fide top four defensemen. I respect that. And then you look at the rest of the Vegas Golden Knights back end and you go, well, I don't know. None of these guys really move the needle. They have like five and six type defensemen. And I think that's what's really killed their season this year. I've watched a lot of their games, and when Marc-Andre Fleury is not on top of his game, they can score as many goals as they want, but the puck's going in at the other end of the rink, and they're losing games that they probably shouldn't. It cost Gerard Gallant his job. And I was like, okay, well, what's going on? Well, if you're not getting Marc-Andre Fleury to play spectacular, Malcolm Subban, if he's playing, doesn't always give you great games. I don't think he's the solution long-term for them when Fleury finally decides to hang things up. You look at the forward unit, pretty solid, 1 through 12. And then you go, well, what's going on the back end? You got two really solid defensemen and then four, five guys that are like, yeah, they're all right. Like, they're playing Derek Englund every night. And the guy was a seventh defenseman prior to being taken in the expansion draft with the Calgary Flames. So I think that they're filling a need, and it's probably a step in the right direction. Strudy, I don't know if it's a game changer, but I think it'll definitely boost that team up because Martinez can eat up 20 minutes if he has to. He's not going to give you a ton of offensive punch, but he's pretty sound defensively. And if they want to keep pucks out of their net, they need guys like him. And giving up 2 second rounders, I think that's a bargain of a deal for the Golden Knights, to be honest.
Tommy, we will see you down at the rink. Have yourself a great day.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.